All right, girls and boys, or more likely, boys, three boys. This is Rish Outfield, and this is the Rish Outcast. This is the first episode I'm doing in my new car, in a brand new car! Sorry, that was really uninspired. Hence this episode. I got a new car. Hopefully I'm releasing these in a certain kind of order so you know about my car accident and stuff before I do this episode. But wow, it's just so haphazard what I release when. And the funny thing is I recorded a Rish Outcast yesterday. And here I am in the car recording again. And in fact, I filled up the, I want to call it the hard drive, whatever you call the, I filled up all the space on my recorder yesterday and I had to go home and delete something and then finish up. But I deleted something again just now and got in the car. I'm going to meet Big, which used to be the tradition for Rish Outcast. You know, I go to meet Big, I record. If I don't finish what I was talking about, I record on the way home after meeting Big. But right now, I'm in a kind of a weird place. I finished my last short story, the short story that I was working on 3 days ago, and I hadn't really been doing any writing. I've been editing the podcast, the Dune Steve podcast, and I had my magic notebook, and I was transcribing a story there. It was one that I started in 2011, and I started it immediately before the last Broken Mirror contest we did, the one where I wrote The Calling, because it, the next story after, in fact, I interrupted that story in 2011 with The Calling, and I never went back to it until 2015, like two magic notebooks later. Yeah, I guess what happened was I had looked through an old notebook and saw that, or I had remembered that story that got abandoned, and I thought, you know, I could finish that. And that does happen every once in a while. It's a rare occurrence. Usually once I stop writing on something, it's gone. It's done. It's lost forever because it's just hard to pick up where you left off. And a lot of times it's hard for me even to know where I was going to go with it if I knew. And if I didn't know, maybe that's why I stopped. But anyhow, I finished typing that up today. And it's sort of my day off. I was scheduled to work, but I got called off, whatever you call it, you know. Not fired. That's coming later. But I did a lot of work this morning on my own things, the things that pay money. So I'm sure I made more money today with my own stuff than I would have had I gone to work, which is nice. It's always cool to have that in the back of your head that, you know, if I lost my job or if I, you know, couldn't take it anymore and just walked out, that I make more money on my off hours than I do when I'm at work. It's kind of nice, but it's also kind of indicative of how crappy my job is. Anyway, I am digressing. I finished that typing up that story today. Oh, and it's not a good one. But who cares? You know, another finished story. That makes, what, 100? So now I'm in between writing projects and in between typing up story projects. And it's just, huh, well, I don't know what to do. Oh, actually, you know, I did start a story the other day. I wrote like the first page or the first chapter, and then I put it down because I didn't know where I wanted to go from there. Something that I worry about is repeating myself, is saying the same things or telling the same story or having the story be about the same things. You know, I have conversations with the few friends that I have, and their lives are always changing because they have a job that takes them from city to city, or new projects and new people are being brought in, or they have a bunch of kids, or they have problems with the wife and the in-laws and the brother-in-law that's a douchebag and a freeloader, and all these things that I don't necessarily experience. You know, though, the episode I was talking about, the episode that I recorded last night, I talked about getting my heart broken. And it's been a long, long time since that's happened to me. Now, part of it is my own fault because I try not to get involved. I prefer not to get involved. And I'm a pessimist. I'm whatever a step past pessimist is, I've become. I'm nearing nihilist. And so, you know, it's rare that I pursue somebody that I'm interested in or even allow myself to be more than superficially interested. I've mentioned many times on the show that there's a crazy girl at work. And, you know, crazy is probably a mean thing to say. So mentally unbalanced, unhinged, disturbed girl at work. And it is really weird that I find myself attracted to her because she is bonkers, guys. Not in peak mental condition we're talking about here. It's strange. I am attracted to her. And from time to time, I will put feelers out there and say, you know, oh, hey, have you seen so-and-so? Do you want to go see so-and-so? And she always deflects me, which is fine. I mean, I'm used to that. But then she becomes super, super friendly again after that. And I was like, oh, okay. Why am I mentioning this? Oh, okay, because I don't have a lot of life experiences. So I tend to tell the same stories over and over again. And maybe not the same stories, but the same type of story. You know, I think I've talked about the things that scare me, the things that fascinate me. There are 5 or 6 subjects that come up over and over again in my fiction. And yeah, poop is probably one of them. I've become hypersensitive to that. Not to the point where I will remove it from something that I've written, but yesterday or the day before, I recorded a little short story for this show, and it had the sentence, crap your pants, in it. You know, when did you last crap your pants? Or, oh, why, crap your pants, why don't you, or whatever. And I thought, well, does that count as scatological then? That one line of dialogue refers to that? And I wonder if it does, then maybe like 80% of my writing has that sort of thing in it. When people talked about scatological stories, I got the impression that they were talking about actual dung being in the story, like Space Shit, that story that I wrote about the living alien feces. It was based on sort of a true story. I think I've told you before that poo fell from the sky during my senior year of high school. And, you know, that's kind of weird, isn't it? But I run into these same themes and same fears and same questions in these stories, and I wonder if that's bad. For example, I'm sure by this point, or I hope by this point, I've run the story Stormy Weather on the Rish Outcast. And it has a woman who was in an accident and she wears a veil. And the second Birth of a Sidekick story has a woman who, because of facial disfigurement, wears a veil. And I thought, oh, geez, that sucks that two of those things, you know, that I wrote within 5 years, right, or 3 or 4 years of each other, had that in them. You know, the Birth of a Sidekick stories and Into the Furnace both take place in the Southwest. In, you know, they're Westerns. They both take place, one takes place in Arizona, one takes place in New Mexico. And, you know, there are gunfights and stuff like that. I don't know if they're gunfights. I find myself mentioning the same sorts of things, and I'm wondering if that is overly repetitious. I mean, at the same time, dude, Westerns have tropes. There is the sheriff. There is the saloon, the bartender. There is the, you know, outlaw and all that stuff that, if you don't include that stuff, it's not a Western. So that stuff, you know, can't really be avoided. And what kind of story would you want to tell if it were avoided? I mean, one has an 11-year-old boy protagonist, and the other has a grown man who's the father of a, a girl that's older than that. So they're, hopefully they're not exactly the same. But like the story that I finished typing up today has really, really mean, pretty people in it. And that made me think of the ugly table and black magic making people beautiful. And I mean, I could come up with 100 examples of things that happen again and again. I've written sort of variations on the same story a couple of times. For example, one of my go-tos, one of the ideas that most fascinates me is me being able to go back to the past and talk to my younger self. And I've written variations on that story 5 or 6 times over the years. It's just something that's always fascinated me about time travel. I think about it. It's sort of a fantasy. I fantasize about going back 30 years or going back 10 years or going back 20 years or going back a year. And what would I say? What would I do? What would be the most useful bit of advice I could give myself, you know, in 2014 or in 1989 or in, you know, 1995 or whenever it is? That's the sort of thing that just interests me. But there are writers, and I've complained about a couple of them, that tend to write the same stuff over and over again. There's the guy who writes about the child geniuses over and over again. And there's the guy who writes about the serial killer that believes that they take the life force of whoever they kill, and they, you know, I just he writes the same books over and over again, and I don't like that. I recognize that as being, if not a weakness, a limitation. Even Stephen King, who's my favorite writer, and I've read practically everything he's written, I've noticed the same things happen in certain books. For example, the female protagonist, the love interest in Joyland and the love interest in Bag of Bones feel really similar, and what happens to them is really similar. I don't know that that's a bad thing, but it certainly can't be a good thing. So, you know, it's made me a little bit aware, made me a little bit nervous about the things that I write, about my own creativity, and about, you know, treading over ground that's already been tread upon. I have expressed in my blog and on this show that I want to be a better writer. I want to grow as a writer. I want to write stuff that I can be proud of. And yet, you know, how many people do I give my writing to and say, hey, tell me what you think, tell me what I should change before it's out there? And, you know, maybe that's the sort of thing that would make me grow as a writer. Also, though, just writing stuff that I've not written before, maybe trying a genre that I've not written before, maybe trying stuff that's always been difficult to me, would help me grow, would help me develop more. Writing in a different style. I like to enter the short story contests a lot because they always make me write stories that I wouldn't have written by myself. You know, I've probably talked about that anytime there was one of those Masters of the Macabre contests that I'm not allowed to participate in anymore. And that's sad that I'm not allowed, because I enjoyed writing those. I think I did 5 stories in that series. Maybe it was 4, but I think it was 5. And 3 of them were probably really good. Well, I liked 3 of them, let's say that. Anyhow, I like that. I like that when there are constraints and they say you have to do A, B, and C. And left to my own devices, I wouldn't do A, B, and C. And so that's something that I enjoy. You know, it's restrictions or, you know, mandates from other people that are useful to me. And that sort of stuff is... It's the sort of thing that a good teacher will encourage you to do. I remember my buddy Jeff, he was a couple years ahead of me in college, and he took 1 creative writing class. And he would always talk to me about what the teacher was saying. The teacher had these rules of things that he absolutely wouldn't, and it might have been a she, I don't know, I didn't take the class with him, but there were these rules that he absolutely did not want in the creative writing. Certain things, like when we were coming up with submission guidelines for the Dunstief, and we looked at other people's submission guidelines and discovered that there was a publication that did not want a transcript of role-playing games, which I was just like, what does that mean? And then somebody sent us several transcripts of role-playing games that he and his friends had played. And I was like, oh, I see why they didn't want these. That's interesting. But yeah, we tried to come up with things that we didn't want. And one of the things that Jeff's teacher did not want was no stories about dead pets. In fact, that's first rule in this class is no dead pets. And so Jeff, because he was an a-hole, decided he was going to write a story called No Dead Pets that was technically not going to break this teacher's rule, but it was also going to, you know, show how he didn't like to be bossed around. Oh, I blew it again. The battery ran out on the recorder, and I didn't know about it. I didn't notice. I think 15 minutes passed, maybe 20 minutes. Let's just ignore my mistake and go on, because I am bound to make it again and again. You know, I mentioned Stephen King earlier. You know, he has this book, Misery, which was made into a fairly famous film. And what happens in Misery is very similar to what happens in his book, Finders Keepers. And sadly, the way that the bad guy is defeated is exactly the same. I mean, so much the same that I have to admit that it ruined Finders Keepers for me. It's just like, oh, what, dude? Again? And yet, you think about 1973, Michael Crichton wrote Westworld, which is about an amusement park, a theme park that has attractions that are... Anyway, they malfunction, they go awry, and the attractions start killing the people who've come to the theme park. And then 20 years later, he writes Jurassic Park, which has a very, very similar premise. But, you know, I don't think Michael Crichton is a hack for doing that. Whereas I was tremendously disappointed in Stephen King for doing it. I mean, but, you know, maybe those are totally different sins. If they are sins, you know, it's hard to say. I mean, I write this story of a man who encounters some children, and they turn out to be creatures that are pretending to be children. I write that in 2001. I write a screenplay about it in 2004. Then I write another short story about it in, I don't know, 2014 on Halloween Eve. Am I a hack? Am I a hack because I do that again and again and again? It's a rhetorical question. I'm not going to answer it. But there are certain themes. There are certain things that I respond to. And I'm going to go back to those again and again unless I consciously force myself not to. And partly that's what this episode is about, is should I consciously force myself not to? There are certain things that I write well, and there are certain things that I don't write well. And it's only natural that I would write about the things that I'm interested in. If you were a huge basketball fanatic, you find that basketball comes up again and again in the things that you write because it's part of you. Why do writers write about writers so often? Because you write what you know. You know that world inside and out. There's the story I wrote called Newfound Fame. And a lot of it is about horror movies and fan conventions. Two things that I know a lot about. the fact that I was passionate about those two things, about horror movies and going to conventions, made that story so much more fun to write, at least for me. I don't know if it was fun to read, but there are pros and cons on both sides. Pros for go ahead and write what you want, even if it's very similar, even if it's got the exact same premise. How many times did Agatha Christie write about a bunch of people go to some remote place or they're stuck someplace and turns out that they all have something in common, or they all have a common enemy, or one among them is a killer? She wrote this kind of stuff again and again, and it worked. You know, the Robert Langdon books that... I can't remember his name now. You know, the Da Vinci Code guy. Is it worth me sitting here for 5 minutes trying to remember his name? I think first name is Dan. Okay, who cares? You know who I'm talking about. He wrote the Da Vinci Code. He wrote Angels and Demons. Seems like there was a third one that I read. Lost Symbol, something like that. And in fact, in Deception Point. And it seems like there was one other book that he wrote, too. They were all the same. Exactly the same. In fact, it bothered me the second or third time when I realized, oh, okay, so this is... He's got a formula, and this is going on. So that's in the con file. But at the same time, why shouldn't a series of adventures be similar, thematically, be similar in story structure, be similar in the big revelation? I don't know. I mean, how many times has James Bond encountered somebody that has, you know, a bunch of minions at his disposal, and he's after world domination or after the destruction of the superpowers of the Earth? He's got some kind of doomsday weapon, and it's up to James Bond to dismantle it. I can't even say how many times that's been done. It's been done a lot of times, but it works. One more point. Alfred Hitchcock, one of the two or three most famous filmmakers of all time, loved to remake his old films. He did a lot of films during the silent era, or, you know, when he first started off in Great Britain, and he enjoyed remaking them several years later because he had new ideas, he had a twist on the way the old one went. It was just fun for him to say, okay, how do I do it? Good evening. How do I make it different? How do I change it? How do I zig when I zagged before? Oh, you know, there was something that I always wanted to do in 1941, and I couldn't. But now, in 1963, I can. Or, you know what I'm saying, 1956. He loved that. And most of the time, an Alfred Hitchcock movie had a certain feel. He would make these thriller, espionage, suspense movies, and more power to him. You know, maybe I can learn something from Alfred Hitchcock. If I've got a story, and it's similar thematically or similar in antagonist, or the main character is, you know, a geeky loser or whatever, like a lot of the stories that I write are about. I remember one time Big told me that... In fact, I remember telling you that one time Big told me you could always tell if it was a story written by Rish Outfield because the main character is a loser. And, you know, I took that personally, and he didn't mean it to be taken personally, but I'm not on the winning side in real life, and so, yeah, a lot of times the main characters in my stories are losers. But then, you know, something magical comes along. Somebody, you know, they've got a wish that comes true, or their bad luck turns around, or they find exactly what they need, or magic seems to enter into it a lot. Maybe I'm telling that same story again and again, but if I'm aware of it and I can say, okay, well, this time I'm going to have the guy's priorities be very different. Or this time I'm going to have the cost of using the magic be much greater than I have in the past. Or you know what? This time, instead of scary, I'm going to try and be funny about it. Or just I'm going to make the character a different age. I'm going to make the character a different gender. I'm going to set this in the past. I'm going to set this in the future. This is going to be a science fiction take on the creatures masquerading as children. Or this time it's going to be aliens, and they're going to be in some kind of spaceship, or they're going to be at a star base, or they're going to be in some planetary colony when these things are going to come around. There's any number of ways you can take the same premise and stretch it and twist it and double it over again so that it doesn't even feel like the same premise. In the same way that Westworld and Jurassic Park are totally different movies, yeah, there is this element in common. But see, tonally and just the way that the story is told and where the story takes place, and who the characters are, and that's a big thing. Who the characters are is so different between Westworld and Jurassic Park. The fact that I'm making the comparison and I'm reminding you that I made the comparison is, it's spurious, it's not cool. Anyway, I don't know if this is an interesting topic for you. I figured I'd call this episode something like, Stop Me If You've Heard This One Before. That's a comedy thing. That's a joke. Somebody telling a joke. But there are stand-up comedians who basically have a set of material and they sort of do variations on that set of material. And you love to hear them do that old bit. The most obvious example is Abbott and Costello with Who's On First. I have heard 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 different versions of Who's On First. And when I was a little boy, I taped a version from their radio show. And it became the definitive version for me because I listened to it over and over and over again and tried to learn it. Later, though, I've heard that they're, you know, super short versions. I've heard one where it's like way extended, like it's like, let's make this into a 20-minute bit. And I never been sick of, and now of course Who's On First is the most famous, greatest stand-up routine in history, right? But there are other stand-up comedians, like for example Louis C.K., that they throw out their material. Louis will perform this stuff for a year. And then it's a new year, it's January or whenever, however he decides, and he's like, all of that is gone, and I have to start afresh. I have to come up with new material. That's got to be insanely difficult for the man. But you apply that to writing, and can you say, okay, the last story that I wrote was a romance, and now I'm going to do a historical drama. And the next one I'm going to do is going to be some suspense survival thing set in space. You know, whatever, where it's just like I'm going to completely switch it up every single time. Not everybody has to do that. I don't have to do that. Do I? I tend to like to write about old people. And I tend to like to write about kids. Whether kids are teenagers or whether kids are literally kids. And yeah, I tend to write about me. But, you know, as long as I can switch those three up and change the genders and, you know, like, you know, when was the last time I wrote about an old woman? Almost never. So maybe I need to do that. I'm just talking to hear myself talk, aren't I, kids? Okay, I don't know how much of that you caught and how much of that you missed. It's sad because it was a social experiment. I didn't realize the battery had died on this little guy. I tried to plug it in to charge, and I realized that I had my phone charger and it wouldn't charge the Zoom. It's a different end that charges a phone than charges this thing. So that's sad, but oh well, that's life. What I had decided was that you know, if I write series, like installments of series, then maybe you can switch out details, you can switch out villains, you can switch out mysteries, switch out threats and challenges, and yet you have the same characters, and the characters are what brings the listener back, the viewer back, the reader back. It's the world that you've created. That's what people tune in for. And I like that idea.
I've got the Birth of a Sidekick stories. You know, you can call them the Benny Parks stories,
which I've only written two of, but I thought it would be neat to write one like every year. You know, I wrote one in 2005, I wrote one in 2015, and this year I thought maybe I would write one that took place in between the two, and a very short story, like not even close to the length of the other two, and I'd call it like A Sidekick Settles, and it would just be about how the status quo changes between those two stories. But I really like the idea of doing one every year or every other year, where it's just another adventure of this boy, and he, you know, he ages a little bit, you know, like maybe he turns 12 in the third story or 12 in the fourth story kind of thing. And in fact, I was going through that notebook yesterday or the day before, and I saw a list. I made a list of five or six possible Ben Parks stories, and none of them jump out at me yet. I think when I do the audio version of the second one, it'll come back to the forefront of my mind, and I'll become excited about telling those stories again, or, you know, stories in that universe, and maybe that will give me, you know, a chance to write another one. I just finished Robert Galbraith's third Cormoran Strike book. It's called Career of Evil, and I don't know if you refer to Robert Galbraith as he or she. I'm just going to say he, even though I know that it's J.K. Rowling. But he writes these characters. They're very alive, and they seem to be going somewhere effortlessly. Like, these were actually people that he knew, that he was just writing about and catching up with them. And obviously time had passed in between the last book and this one. And then the book ends, and I wonder, is there more to be told? Did Galbraith only intend for there to be these three books, and there are no more forthcoming? And in which case, I have to admit I'm a little bit disappointed, but I'm also satisfied that it ended on a high note. This was a really enjoyable book. It was scary. It was frustrating. I honestly didn't know where it was going, and I'd really enjoy writing a series like that where you catch up with these characters. And, you know, there's been a little bit of progress made, but the amount of time that has passed in real life between writing it is not reflected in the book series. For example, Birth of a Sidekick, I wrote in 2005. 10 years go by and I write a sequel that takes place, what, 3 months later? That's just magical to me, that a whole decade passed in my life and no time really at all passed for Ben Parks. You know, essentially, I could be 70 and still writing adventures of this teenage boy, you know, in the 1890s. I probably have to go back and rewrite some of these last stories so that they're more historically accurate and so that it's more fleshed out. And if I did go back, there was a moment when I was writing the second one where I talked a little bit about Ben's time at San Domingo, which was the orphanage he came from. And I thought about going back to Birth of a Sidekick and fleshing the orphanage part out a little bit more, like naming the priests and the nuns that were there, giving just, you know, a little bit more of what Ben's day-to-day life was like, so that, well, I mean, partly just so that it wasn't so lopsided, in that the first story is, you know, a novella, I guess, if that, could be a novelette. And the second story is almost a novel, you know what I mean? It's like the first one is, let's say, 30 pages long, and the second one is 90 pages long. But that sort of nonsense is what you do when you're writing novel series, and I'm on like the fourth Ben Parks adventure, and I want to set up an antagonist that somebody who was a bully at San Domingo that made life a living hell for Ben. And then he runs into him again in, you know, wherever he is, now that he is on his own and a sort of gunslinger, you know, that... holy cow. Okay. What if this bully was 4 or 5 years older than Ben? And he didn't just torment Ben, but he tormented all the, like, the young kids at the orphanage. And he was a tool. But 4 or 5 years previous, the lean rider came to San Domingo and he picked this kid that's the bully to be his new sidekick. And they went off and had their adventures or whatever. And meanwhile, Ben, you know, who's only 7 years old or 6 years old or whatever, stays at the orphanage and, you know, lives his life. And then now it's all these years later and Ben is 13 years old. And that sidekick, the one that was a bully to him, is a grown man now. But it didn't work out with the lean rider. Like, you know, he had too much anger, or he wouldn't obey, or whatever. And he basically just got dropped in San Antonio somewhere or something like that on his own. Because Jerome Cook says, no, screw this. I'm not, you know, I've given you 3 chances and you failed all 3 times. You know, if this were a baseball metaphor, you'd be out. I'm going to get me a new sidekick. And so this kid has been on his own in San Antonio, forced to live on his wits and what training he got with the lean rider and his own mean-spirited, conniving mind. And so he's become a bad guy. He's become some kind of, you know, thief and rapist, and maybe he's a killer even. And he's decided, you know, he's going to seek revenge on Jerome Cook. So he seeks him out, you know, and maybe he goes back to San Domingo and they say, oh yeah, we haven't seen the lean rider since he picked his last sidekick, who was Ben Parks. But we got a letter from Ben that said, you know, he's living in this town called Trueno, and, you know, and he's fine and all that. And so this bully, this failed sidekick, decides to go to Trueno and find the lean rider. But, you know, if he can beat the crap out of this kid who got the job that was rightfully his, more the better. Shoot, guys, my mom talks about, there's some writer, some local writer who writes a book every 6 months or whatever in this series for YA readers, that, where the books just write themselves at this point. He said in the interview, and she said, yeah, he said they just write themselves. And I thought, whoa, what would that be like? But basically, I'm writing one as we speak, huh? It's just writing itself. I don't know if you will ever see that story that I was just coming up with, but I like it. I think that right there are the seeds of a mighty good story. So, woo, there's that. And I guess what I was getting at is, if I ever write that story, if let's say that that's the fourth Ben Parks, you know, novella, I might be tempted to go back to the first one and insert references to this other sidekick, the bully character, and all that. And, you know, while I'm at it, why not flesh out more of that first story? You know, I always complain about the Pony Express line that was in there. And I don't know if I cut it out for the podcast version, but I'm fairly sure it's cut out of the Amazon version, where I had that line about a Pony Express rider had been this way. And my friend said, hey, dude, the Pony Express only lasted for X number of months. So that definitely puts your story at a certain time frame, which doesn't jibe with the rest of the story. And so, yeah, I think I just cut it out. Anyhow, I guess what I wanted to talk about was, you know, repeating myself, feeling like I'm not original enough, not clever enough. I'm treading well-worn ground, but I've sort of talked myself out of that. You know, I want to tell another Ben Parks story, which is another Western, which is another sidekick, child protagonist adventure story. And, gosh, there's nothing wrong with that. So it's weird. I asked the musical question, do I write the same stuff over and over and over again? And I guess I sort of answered it. Maybe, but who cares? Keep going. Which isn't to say I shouldn't actively try to make sure that one protagonist is different from another, or one antagonist is different from another. And I will. I'll try and keep that in mind, you know, the next thing that I write, you know, so that it's not just the same bad guy that I've written about before. Hey, thanks a lot for joining me on this little drive, sitting in the parked car with me. It's good stuff. I'm sort of happy to be alive right now. I'm sort of happy to have a voice and creativity and an outlet for it. And if you enjoy listening to the Rish Outcast, again, you can always let me know. But even if you don't let me know, just give me a thumbs up mentally and keep listening. Because, you don't always catch me in a good mood. It's a rare thing, isn't it? All right, good night, guys.
The Rish Outcast is still produced under a Creative Commons Attribution No Derivatives license. It doesn't look like it's going away anytime soon.
There was a publication that did not want... I can't think of the word. Starts with a T. Not transmissions, but it's like transmission. It's when you write down all the dialogue in a movie. What do you call it? It's fuck, I can't remember. You know, you want the actual screenplay, you don't want a transcript. Okay.